Welcome. I'm Rhonda McBride, inviting you to engage in Alaska's favorite sport, politics. And today's show is a front row seat on our historic special U.S. House election. We'll look at how the new ranked choice voting system worked to send Mary Peltola to Washington, D.C. to fill out the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. And then we'll move on to the next inning of the political season, the general election, to select someone to take the full two-year term, which means that Sarah Palin and Nick Begich are still in the running, along with Mary Peltola. Some veteran political observers to give you Thursday afternoon quarterback election analysis coming your way on this Thursday's Juno afternoon.
Support for Juno afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Gonna sheesh for being here with us today. You are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, Alaska politics is just never dull. Partly because it's so unpredictable sometimes. But our guests today never get tired of watching the players, following their strategies in the game of Alaska politics. So we have finished the first big game in the series, the race to fill the remainder of late Congressman Don Young's term, and Mary Peltola won the vote in that special election through a new system of voting where voters rank their candidates. Though a Democrat, Peltola got enough second choice votes to keep her lead, and today we are going to take a closer look at how this new system of voting worked and what we might expect on Election Day, because Alaska on Election Day is basically the Super Bowl of politics for our state anyway. Well, we'll have two political scientists joining us, Benjamin Riley, professor of political science at the University of Western Australia. He's based at the East-West Center in Hawaii, and he will quickly refresh our memory about Australia's history with ranked choice voting. We'll have him later in our broadcast. And we also have with us Glenn Wright, who is an assistant professor at the University of Alaska Southeast. He and Benjamin Riley have been studying ranked choice voting as we go forward in this historic election. And we also have former Representative Beth Curtula joining us. She worked on Mary Peltola's campaign, so we'll be getting her take on everything. And we also have Andrew Halcrow with us. He's a former state representative, but he also has a podcast called With All Due Respect. And both Mary and Andrew also served in the legislature with Mary Peltola. So that's the common denominator, but Andrew Halcrow is a Republican. So we got two sides of the aisle represented here. So let's start with you, Beth, because you were campaigning for Mary.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you for asking me, Rhonda. And it'll be really interesting to see what, you know, Glenn has to say about ranked choice. We were just talking, and not to age myself, but when Glenn was an intern, both Mary, who's significantly younger than I am, but both Mary and I went and talked to his class. So we're
good times.
Yeah,
good times.
We're excited to be here together. But and hey, Andrew, I miss you. So I think, you know, I always knew Mary was going to win this, and I know she's going to win the general. I think once in a while, you have the right person at the right time in the right place. And I truly believe this. I believe Mary, frankly, would have won whether it was ranked choice or not. She's worked herself, I mean, I don't want to say to death, but I would teasingly say during the campaign that it's like, you know, it's another death march because when she came to Juneau, she did not have a minute to rest. And as her friend, her dear friend, you know, I worry about her not eating and doing too much, but she had that passion. She loves Alaska. She knows Alaska. She had 10 strong years in the legislature. So she's no neophyte, and that she's out there doing this just
pleases me tremendously. And the wave of hope that I felt go over Alaska last night was just wonderful. So,
well, I want to go to Andrew Halcrow. What I'd like to find out from you is, everybody says this is a history-making election. In your opinion, why is it a history-making election?
Well, I think it's a – first off, hi, Beth. It's so nice to hear your voice. I think it's a history-making election for a number of reasons. Number one, it's the first election we've really seen the results of ranked choice voting, which the voters approved. The second thing is, of course, you know, the biggest thing is we just elected the first Alaska Native to Congress, and beyond that, a woman, which is fabulous, right? So many firsts were accomplished with the result of the election results yesterday. And I'm going to echo what Beth said. I still think there is a very tough and long road ahead for the next 70 days until the November election. However, I think Peltola's candidacy, the positive energy that she brings, just her self-awareness and her empathy that radiates is just so refreshing. She was we did an interview for our podcast for my podcast 2 days ago with Mary, and this was before she knew she had won. And so we talked about, okay, what if you lose? What if you win? And, you know, the difference in the tone and the tenor was all the same. I mean, you know, Mary is just your complete calm, cool, and smart package. And so I think she, again, to echo what Beth said, I think she's just the right candidate at the right time.
I love it when we agree, Andrew. And we did. No, we really did. It was Mary was part of an entering class in the legislature that included Andrew, myself, and Lisa Murkowski. And I think all of us were really, truly people that wanted to come in and work for the good of Alaska. And it resulted in a lot of great things happening. And our class was just very, you know, we got along well, which was wonderful.
You know, it's so interesting looking back because Mary seemed to be one of those early politicians that got good at crossing the aisle. Although, Mary also had kind of a rough start because there was this moment when she was a freshman and she scolded lawmakers for shuffling through their messages and mail and not paying attention to a bill that she was addressing that was very important. And Andrew, do you remember that?
They deserved it.
Yeah,
go for it,
I do. I do remember that. And, you know, as a freshman lawmaker, you have certain expectations that are never met your freshman year in the legislature. You have all these wonderful ideas that you're going to accomplish things in how government works. But that's why they say you never want to see the sausage made. But yes, I do remember that. And I think that, again, proves the point that Mary cares about the public policy she does. She cares about the people it affects. So, yeah, she was offended that people weren't paying attention to something that was very important to her.
Yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. But she got a lot of criticism, I think, from within the legislature.
Just for a brief amount of time. And Mary listened to that and talked. I remember talked with the speaker and talked with people. And she got up, I think, the next day and said, you know, that was a very important issue to me. And I'm sorry if I ruffled feathers. And that was really how she put it. And it was well received. And I think she was forgiven for that very brief moment of, I mean, I was with her, man. You know, it was awful, you know, especially for the younger women there that they just didn't want to listen. So I thought Mary was absolutely right. However, having said that, you know, here we are, what, Andrew? 20 years later, Mary's, you know, raised all of her children. She's, I don't think it's a mellowing. I think she is even more who she is. She does stand up. She's very powerful. She's the most eloquent speaker I know. But yeah, she apologized. It really wasn't that big a deal.
But yeah, should she have to apologize?
Oh, no,
for that
I don't just think. I'm with you on that. But she didn't want to offend people. She wanted them to listen.
But that's, to me, how she got on the radar screen. Because as I recall, KTUU played a news clip of that moment. And it was kind of like for the freshman lawmaker, that's the first you heard of her. So, Andrew, from your perspective, how did Mary grow past that initial sort of rough spot?
Well, look, I mean, I think you have to, I mean, I think you have to give credit where credit's due. Mary wasn't the only one in our freshman class that was really outspoken. I mean, that was the entire class of 98. You know, you had Murkowski and Howcrow and Kurtula and Sadler. You had Jim Whitaker, Drew Scalzi. Yeah. I mean, you really had a lot of independent freshmen that showed up in 1998 that said, you know what, oil's $9 a barrel. We're tired of business as usual. We want to find some solutions. And so, you know, along that path, sure, hey, I think Mary did it once. I stopped counting how many times I angered the entire floor of the house.
You were right too.
But when you're passionate about something and you can see the need for it, you do want people to engage. And of course, there's a right way and a wrong way. But you know, Mary Sadler was the least of the behavioral problems in the class of 1998. I can assure you that.
That's hilarious. You're right.
Well, Andrew, you kind of stuck your foot into doo-doo with some of your comments about rural Alaska at one point. And
tell us
about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was me, you know, this privileged kid from Sand Lake showing up in Juneau trying to, you know, tell rural Alaska how it should be living its life. I mean, you know, you couldn't have had a less qualified messenger to stand up and deliver that message. But yet, in my infinite wisdom, I found a way to stand up and put both feet in my mouth. And, you know, while I took a lot of criticism, you know, there were two people that I really credit for my education on rural Alaska. And one is Al Kukish and the other is Mary, because both of them on two different occasions came to me and said, look, I get why you think that, but let me show you the facts. And what happened was, as a freshman lawmaker, I fell in to the same trap that some partisan freshmen fall into, and that is just accepting the current narrative. That's just accepting that rural-urban divide is because rural Alaska can't get their act together, right? It's not about economies of scale. It's not about quality of life. It's not about health and safety. It's just about money. And what Al Kukish and Mary Peltola did was they really educated me that those first 3 months I was in the legislature, and it really changed the rest of my term because I understood more, and they taught me how to have empathy and to actually seek out, you know, the facts.
Now, just a little bit of disclosure for me. I worked in Bethel for about 10 years at KYUK, the public radio station, and so I knew Mary. And my husband, in fact, worked for the Tundra Drums newspaper. And when she was just heading into college, she was writing a lot of columns. And they were politically oriented. And my husband said, you know, you really ought to meet this young lady. She's very, very bright. And, you know, of course, my husband is always right.
Yeah, mine too.
that's right. But the other thing that was kind of curious is that she helped her father campaign, Ward Sadler, and I believe that he ran as a Republican. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was interesting is that the signs were purposely just Sadler. That was Mary's maiden name. And they didn't say Mary, they didn't say Ward, just in case Mary decided to run for office. So I'm just thinking that, like, this is around college age, that there's this kind of thinking going on with this family. But Andrew, do you think that back then, did anybody have any inkling that this woman would be filling Don Young's shoes?
No, not at all. And I, as a matter of fact, I brought that up with Senator Murkowski this morning doing a podcast interview. And I said, you know, would you have imagined that, you know, 24 years ago, you know, you entering the legislature in January of 1999, along with Mary, would one day be serving in Congress together? I mean, you know, it absolutely blows your mind.
What about you, Beth? Because you later became House Minority Leader.
That was Mary's leader. I always knew Mary was destined for something great. Because of her passion and because of her eloquence. She's the most beautiful natural speaker I've ever known. So I just had the sense that somehow, somewhere, and when she called me and told me she was going to run for this seat, I went, yes, this is it. And I knew from the beginning she would win it. I just, you do have that feeling once in a while, and I know it sounds maybe a little odd, but I really knew from the beginning, and I did know from ranked choice, too. I thought it was going to be her chance, and I'm just so pleased that she's going to do this because, oh, and I'm with Andrew, it is mind-boggling to think about, like, our first days of the legislature and think about Lisa being senator and Mary being a congressperson is just like, yeah, we would have all, I guess we would have all, they would have laughed the hardest maybe. I was like, yeah, that's not how we felt those first few days, that's for sure. I was just trying to, gosh, I was so overwhelmed when I first got on the floor. Yeah, I was just trying to figure out where I sat, right? So it's pretty fun.
Well, there's one other thing I'd like to bring up that was interesting about Mary. I don't know how much the legislature still practices it, but Friday became Cuspic Day. And it was something that Mary initiated.
That's right.
And it sort of did go across the aisle because you, especially the Republican women who were lawmakers, they really enjoyed showing off their cuspics and went out and had them made. But how did all of that get started? How did Mary make Friday's Cuspic Day?
Mary had a really lovely aide, and Katie, and I'm going to forget her last name. I think they were starting to do it prior to this happening, but it's really a sad story. She had a very minor issue and went to the doctor in rural Alaska, and he didn't diagnose correctly. And she died. She died of sepsis. It was horrifying. It was just wrong, should never have happened. And after that, we picked up on our Friday cuspic wearing, and it is a wonderful tradition. I think they do still do it, or at least I hope they do it. And we just... that was a really wonderful way to initiate a lot of cultural education for a lot of people, and Mary really did that, and it was so much fun. I mean, I still have a cuspic my mom made for me so that I could wear it, and I just treasure that memory, so yeah.
So, Andrew, what do you think about things like Mary's Cuspic Day?
I think it shows who Mary is. I mean, Mary wants to share her culture. She wants to educate people on her about her culture. She has this vision. In again, you know, we talked about this a couple of days ago, where even when we worked together in the legislature on things like the Fiscal Policy Caucus, she was very mindful that the state is made up of several moving parts. There's rural, there's urban, there's the Southeast, there's the Southwest. She was very mindful that when we worked on fiscal policy about how these levers we were pulling were going to affect the different regions. And that's one of the things that always impressed me is some lawmakers I served that were rural legislators were very rural centric, only concerned about their front yard and their backyard. Mary, when we would talk and work on policy, and as I said, the Fiscal Policy Caucus, she was very concerned about how that policy would affect every region of the state and their economies. So, you know, that's one of the things I've always loved about Mary is she has a very kind of broad vision inclusiveness and collaboration. And if she can share something with you, whether it's her culture or information, that's just her nature.
Right.
So that kind of helped her cross boundaries. But I can expect that as we head into the general election, the ramifications of her perhaps being a possible representative that enables the House to keep a Democratic majority will dawn. and some of the stuff that's going to come out, it's going to get ugly. I mean, not just because of Mary, but it's the nature of the beast.
Well, it is, and I would expect that, I think, in the next 70 days, especially between Palin and Begich, you can expect some pretty sharp knives to come out. I mean, that's to be expected because the only way Palin's going to advance is if she steals more votes from Begich, and the only way Begich is going to advance if he steals more votes from Palin. So, you know, but Mary is not going to get lost in the crossfire. But I think one of the things that, from a political strategy standpoint, Mary has done so well, she's insulated herself by being Mary, mm-hmm. right? Exactly. If I turn on the TV tomorrow and see Sarah Palin or Nick Begich going after Mary, you know, Mary Peltola, I'm going to go, whoa, you know, I mean, I turn on the TV and I see Begich going after Palin. I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. But I think Mary has done a good job insulating herself against some of those more partisan attacks because of her persona and really because of her record.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is that she and Sarah Palin also had a very amicable relationship. They had their babies at the same time. And so I think that Sarah Palin has been very careful not to be rancorous with Mary, just to kind of keep that calm, keep still waters. But, you know, that we might see that change. And one of the things that Sarah Palin said yesterday after the results were announced is that, yes, Mary Peltola is a very nice person. I like her a lot. And there's a lot of good things about her, but we basically have very different positions. We are very different. And that was kind of an interesting statement. So I suppose that the differences between Mary and Sarah will become more pronounced. What do you think, Andrew?
Well, and I think that's to be expected, and I will tell you that from firsthand knowledge. In 2006, when I was running for governor against Sarah, and you know, during the primary, we had become fairly cordial. I mean, we would huddle after events or debates and chat, but as soon as the primary was over, and you know, there was three of us focused towards the November election, I mean, there was no more friendship. I mean, things got very icy and very sharp because, you know, then you're competing for votes. You're no longer, you know, sipping coffee, talking about the previous evening's debate. And so I would expect that. But I think both Palin and Begich have to be very, very careful about trying to bring Peltola into some kind of, you know, toxic environment, because I don't think Alaskans are in the mood for that. And I think they would face a very swift backlash.
Yeah, I think that no matter what, Mary's going to shine above this, because as Andrew's saying, that is who she is. She's not into the rancorous, nasty, bitter, infighting party politics at all. And no matter what party, right? I mean, really thinking back to how we all worked, really from the beginning, it wasn't about party. It was about getting things done for Alaska. Very reminiscent to how all our parents, you know, how my dad worked. He was leader of coalitions. And, you know, I think we could have had coalitions, you know, really in a broad sense we did, because Bill Hudson, who's a Republican, really helped start our fiscal policy caucus, which, as Andrew again is saying, man, when we entered, you talk about problems, $9 a barrel? It was pretty ugly.
Yeah, boy, and we've been there, and probably will be there again.
Oh, God.
You never know. But you know, one other thing before we go to political analysis.
I want to hear Glenn.
Well, and we're going to bring in Benjamin Riley from Hawaii shortly. But one of the things I did want to ask the two of you about is I remember a particular moment in the legislature. And Andrew, I don't think you were in the legislature at that time. Maybe you were, but it was when there were some ugly radio DJ jokes in Anchorage. These two very popular DJs were making very racist and sexist jokes that targeted Native women. And you know, I really don't want to give it dignity by saying exactly what they did, but maybe we need to hear what they did because we can appreciate just how ugly it was. But basically, they were joking with this play on I dream of making love to the Yukon and peeing on a Native woman.
Right.
And I mean, that just
was it.
That horrified people. And, you know, it took that radio station a long time to respond to that. And Mary's response was to do something very unusual in the house. It's called an order, the sense of the mm-hmm. house. Can you explain, mm-hmm. Beth, what a sense of the house is and how unusual it is?
Well, it's sort of the legislature's way to speak out, and it is really unusual. I'm trying to think, Andrew, if we ever did it while you were there. But once in a great while, everybody is caught by an issue and wants to speak out on it, and you don't do a bill or you don't do a resolution. For one thing, that would take too long. And this particular comment struck everyone, and we were all disgusted. And Mary, you know, that's really hard, right, when it's about your culture and about you in essence. And Mary just spoke out beautifully again, so strong and eloquent, even though she's having to bear this burden, right, of having it be directly discriminatory. And we did do a sense of the house. And I guess, Rhonda, you talked to Speaker Harris, which and he said he helped with that. And I don't doubt it because we were all there. And so once in a great while, that will happen. But for Mary, she had to really carry that, and that's a difficult thing to do, but I watched her do it, man.
It was interesting that she got support from across both aisles.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're not
troglodytes,
right? They got it.
This wasn't the first time, actually. I remember in what you're referring to happened after I left the legislature. But while I was in the legislature, there was a fairly controversial happening where teenagers downtown were targeting Alaska Natives with paintball guns, right? And there were some videos that surfaced, and I remember us watching those in the Capitol. And that was really the first time. And even back then, you know, Mary was very involved in, okay, how do we address this? How do we get the word out that this is not Alaskan? This is not what Alaskans do. And so that was not the first time that she had really stood up and said, okay, you know, we need to draw the line.
And that is a good place to leave it when we just kind of give you a little bit of background about Mary Peltola, because I think we talked about a lot of things that people might not recall or even know about some of her legislative history. So we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will have the political analysis that I promised you earlier. So stay with us. Welcome back. You are listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and we are just having just a real political gab fest here. Hope you're enjoying it and hearing some things that you might not have known about. But I want to recap who our guests are for this program. Benjamin Riley, he's a political scientist based at the East West Center in Hawaii, and he also is a professor of international relations, to add that to his long list of things. And Glenn Wright is assistant professor of political science at the University of Alaska Southeast. And together, they are working on some research about how ranked choice voting is going in Alaska. And of course, we have Beth Curtula with us. She's a former state representative, as well as Andrew Halcrow. Beth is a Democrat. Andrew is a Republican. So we've been getting their insights on how the ranked choice voting is going so far and a little bit of background on Mary. Well, Benjamin, I would like to start off with you, because to me, it's so interesting to talk to you. We've talked with you before about ranked choice voting because Australia has a long history of it, and you've been studying ranked choice voting where it's taken place elsewhere in the country. So maybe you could give us a little bit of an introduction to the history of ranked choice voting.
Sure, Rhonda, and good to be on your show again. Look, ranked choice voting, you wouldn't know it from some of the commentary that we've seen, but ranked choice voting is actually quite widely used around the world. You mentioned it's used in Australia, where I come from. It's been used there for over 100 years and, you know, has become just a very regular part of our elections. People don't even really comment on it or think it's unusual. It's also used in Ireland. It's used for a lot of local and mayoral elections in the UK. And it's increasingly used elsewhere in the United States, including in another state, Maine, introduced it a couple of years before Alaska. There's a lot of big cities on the West Coast, like San Francisco, that use ranked choice voting. So it's not an unusual system. Some of the commentary I've heard from, well, actually from Sarah Palin, amongst others, has sort of suggested that it's somehow some very strange, you know, unusual model that's been foisted on you know, Alaska or some sort of experiment. Well, it's not unusual. It does tend to have certain properties that play out in a similar way, despite very different politics in very different countries. And one of those is that it tends to reward candidates who position themselves in the political center, and it is less rewarding for candidates who come from one of the more extreme positions, whether it's on the right wing or the left wing. And one of the reasons for that is that it's harder if you're an extremist to pick up those number two votes. And I think we've seen just in the election, the special election you just had, that those second rankings can be really important. And, you know, Mary Peltola won. She had a good, you know, very strong first rank vote, but she also picked up a surprisingly large number of second rankings from Nick Begich's voters. And that was enough to win. So that sort of result is is kind of the standard result, I would say, for ranked choice voting, that the candidate who sits in the center and can both has quite a strong primary support base, first choice support base, but also picks up enough second choices from candidates, from supporters of candidates who are eliminated, is the one that goes on to win. And that's important because it means that you are essentially finding who the consensus choice of the broader electorate is. And in this case, it's pretty clear that the consensus choice, the majority choice, was Mary Peltola. But it could have been different. You know, a couple of thousand votes, rankings gone the other way, and Sarah Palin could have won it as well. So I think I do think it shapes up for a very interesting rerun in November.
What about you, Glenn? I know that both of you, before the election and after the election, when we were waiting for the second choice balloting to come in, really couldn't really figure out or couldn't predict what the outcome was going to be. Did some questions get answered for you?
Yeah, I mean, unlike Beth, I was not at all sure how the final result was going to fall, and I could have imagined it easily going in either direction.
You should have talked to me first.
Apparently, yeah. Well, you know, I'm normally the last one to know, as it turns out. But you know, I think that in keeping with what Ben was saying, I think there's a strong argument to be made that Mary Peltola positioned herself, I think probably accurately, as the most moderate of the three candidates. Of course, much of the discourse has been around this Democrat versus these two Republicans. But Peltola was able to position herself, I think, from the very beginning of the campaign as a moderate Democrat who was running to the center. And, you know, that was very much in contrast, obviously, to Palin, who was running as a conservative. And I think Begich tried to position himself as a moderate after Don Young's death, but he faced a problem, which was that he had begun his campaign initially anticipating a run in November. Well, actually, you know, this fall in the primary against Young, and trying to position himself as a more conservative alternative to Don Young. And I think his position shifted after Young's death, and after it became clear that his best shot at election was to run as a moderate. And in a way, he was in a position to be able to do that because he doesn't have a political record in Alaska. But it was an issue for him, and I think ultimately he came off as being quite conservative, and that made it a challenge for him to pursue support from moderate voters. And of course, the great majority of voters in Alaska are relatively moderate, and there are more registered independent voters in Alaska than there are Democrats or Republicans combined.
So, Andrew, what do you think about the way things turned out, that Mary Peltola did actually get a fairly sizable chunk of Nick Begich's vote? Did you expect that? Because, you know, the Republicans had quite a campaign going, you know, vote red all the way.
Well, it was kind of an interesting confluence of really strategy and, you know, reality, if you will. Mm-hmm. Nick Begich throughout his campaign mailers told people, you know, just to vote for him and not rank Palin or Peltola. I mean, I don't know how many mailers I received where they were like, rank this person, but don't rank that person. And at the end of the day, you know, people did exactly what Begich wanted, and they didn't rank a second vote. And obviously that had an impact with, what was it, 10 or 11,000 undervotes. But personally, as a registered Republican, this was the best election since, well, in all my years of voting. And I'll tell you why. Because up until now, when I went to vote in a primary, I was asked, you know, I had to take a Republican ballot. I, in any other given year, I would not have been able to cast my ballot for Mary Peltola. I would have been limited to Nick Begich, the Manchurian candidate, or Sarah Palin, the, you know, the walking train wreck. I mean, as a Republican, those are my two choices, right? But with ranked choice voting, suddenly it's like, no, there are no boundaries. And this goes directly back, Rhonda, you might remember 2 years ago when the legislature was addressing ranked choice voting. There was testimony from Glenn Clary, who was the chairman of the Republican Party, who said on the record that he thought that if Alaska adopted ranked choice voting, it would be the end of political parties. And this is why you're seeing that pushback now from people like Palin going, oh, this is unfair. It's not unfair. As Ben just described, it gives people like Andrew Halcrow, a moderate Republican, it gives me actually a voice instead of being, you know, locked into a cell with two extreme nut jobs.
Well, those are your words.
Yes, they are my
Good
words.
Job,
and as a registered
Andrew.
Republican, I will stand by them.
Not all Republicans, I point out, feel the same way as you do. And a lot of Sarah Palin's positions kind of go in line with a lot of Republicans in our state. So I guess maybe let's go back to Ben, because what about the general election? This is going to be kind of a different ball game, I think. Maybe will the gloves be off a little more? What happens next with the ranked choice process?
Yeah, I think that is the question. And so I'll give you my take. Is that I think Palin is still a very good chance or the Republicans are a good chance to retake this seat. And I'll tell you why. In a normal race, as Andrew just mentioned, you know, you would expect more of a flow on between the two Republican candidates. I mean, in a more normal situation, people would rank the red. You obviously had, you know, polarizing candidates, and you also had, and I think this is the big error that both Palin and Begich made, they went out of their way to say they were not going to personally, Palin certainly said, I'm not going to rank Begich number two. So that's a big signal to all of her supporters, and we don't know yet, but I think we will find out when we get the full ballot details that most of her supporters would have followed that advice. So if she had come in third, then Mary Peltola would have won by even more because, you know, there would have been fewer votes going to the other Republican candidate, Begich. Begich came in third and, you know, only half of his voters were prepared to give a number two vote to Palin. You know, 5 in 10. If 6 in 10 had given a number two vote to Palin, she would have won the election. So there's not that much in it. And I think a learning process, and I think I've read Palin saying she's going to sort of try and understand ranked choice voting and a kind of an accommodation to the strategic realities of this system means that this seat is absolutely still in play for the Republicans, despite Mary Peltola obviously being extremely popular and she's, you know, she's going to have all sorts of incumbency advantages and so on. So November is still wide open. And just a last point, Rhonda, we saw something very similar in Maine a couple of years ago where they introduced ranked choice voting And there was a Republican incumbent in a seat who did the same thing. I'm not going to give any second choices. None of, you know, I'm not going to do any deals. And he ended up losing to a Democrat who had said, yeah, sure, there's some independents who I think are similar in views to me. I'd be happy to give them a number two rank. And because he made that gesture, he picked up enough number two rankings from those independents when they were eliminated and just won the seat. So this part of this is just the candidates learning about the system. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, they've now got 4 months to learn.
It'll be interesting to see the lessons that they learn. Well, Andrew, one of the things with ranked choice voting is that it was a ballot measure. And so that means that the legislature can come back after a certain period of time, I think it's, 2 years, and do something different, change it back. Do you anticipate that there will be a move to do this, and will it be successful?
Well, I think regardless of the outcome, you are going to have a group of Republican legislators who next January file bills to return to the old system. I think that's guaranteed. I think the real question is who's going to be the governor? Because if you have a Bill Walker or a Les Guerra, that bill gets vetoed. If you have a Mike Dunleavy, that bill is going to get signed in 30 minutes. So I really think that, you know, if Alaskans are truly interested in ranked choice voting and looking at the polling, 85% said it was easy and it was fine. If Alaskans want to protect that ranked choice voting, then they need to pay attention to who they're electing in the other slots as well.
I agree.
Well, can I dig into something personal? And you can tell me no, but I just can't resist asking. Beth, would you be willing to tell me how you voted? Did you pick a second choice? I mean,
no.
I know you voted for Mary because you campaigned
for her. No, I voted
for
Mary, and I did not pick a second choice. And I'll tell you why. I have worked with Sarah Palin. I know her very well. I could not vote for her as a second choice. And I guess I know too much about Begich that in my heart, I just couldn't do it. I think that what Ben said, I think in 70 days, I don't think anybody's going to, quote, learn anything. I think we're going to see Mary shine through. I think she's going to be a terrific congressperson. She's going to be the incumbent. And I think more people will rank her first than she had to begin with. And now that people know her and see what she can do, she's going to pull more second votes. She'll pull them from both Sarah and Begich. It's, you know, I've never viewed politics really as a game myself. I vote my heart. I can't do it. I know in the future, I think there will be a lot more candidates that will shine and come forth, and that this is going to work well. I think it already does work well. I think it's breaking up the rancorous, difficult kind of campaigning. I think it is actually working. So, I mean, I hope we can hang in there with this because I think it really helps our society.
Andrew, moment of truth. Would you mind sharing how you voted?
Sure. I voted for Mary Peltola first, and for my second choice, I wrote in Tara Sweeney.
Good job, Andrew.
You know, one of the last conversations I had with Don Young, you know, he talked about how he was hoping that a Native woman would succeed him. And I kind of wonder what Don Young would think about this.
I think he'd like it.
Well, I guess we won't know that, but I just think that's very interesting that Don Young foresaw that a Native woman would be next in line one way or another. And, of course, Mary is only there for the remainder of his term, but yet she has made history. And so at the beginning of the show, I asked Andrew and Beth, in what ways did they think that the election made history? This special election for the U.S. House. So what about you? We haven't heard very much from you, Glenn.
There's too many interesting things happening in this room. I mean, I think, you know, I think Ben and I probably share the same viewpoint, which is that what's really striking about this election, in addition to everything that Andrew and Beth have already noted, is that we've adopted this this election system, which is likely to generate much more sensible politics and politics which are much more in keeping with the preferences of most Alaskan voters, and also an election system that allows Alaskan voters to more fully express their preferences. And as Andrew noted, we don't have to vote strategically anymore. We don't need to worry about
pick who you want.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to worry about you know, voting for a spoiler. You can vote your conscience and then also mark a second choice. And I think that that's not complicated or convoluted or complicated trick to rig elections. I think it's a really wonderful system, and it's consistent with Alaska's history as a political leader, you know, promoting and adopting ideas which are progressive and thoughtful ways of managing government efficiently and effectively.
Permanent fund dividend.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Constitution.
Yeah, exactly.
So many things. Well, one thing that I followed is I wanted to see how the national media would be covering this. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there wasn't very good coverage yesterday. It was basically Sarah Palin lost, and she was the candidate that was endorsed by Trump. And then today I saw a piece from MSNBC's Steve Kornacki breaking down the totals and kind of teaching America about how ranked choice voting works. So that was really interesting. But Ben, did you follow any of the national coverage? Were you checking that out just to see how this race was perceived by the national media?
Oh, yeah. There's actually been quite a bit of national coverage, not just of the race, but of the reforms. And by that, particularly in the big, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, they've all run stories before the election about the new system, and I think Glenn's right. You know, this is the sort of system that probably sounds like it works well for Alaska, given the nature of Alaska. But I think there's also a lot of interest in, well, what does this mean for the rest of the United States? Are there other states that might, you know, benefit from these kinds of reforms? You know, Nevada has a ballot initiative coming up to introduce essentially a version of the Alaskan system, a top five, not a top four, but basically identical. And I think there is a lot of interest because this polarization problem has become so prevalent and is playing out in different states in different ways, but it's, you know, it's a national problem. If this is seen as a way to help address that, then I think you can expect to see, you know, more attempts in more places to bring in the Alaskan model. And what that means is that people are going to be looking at Alaska. They're just going to be, you know, okay, how did it work there? There's going to be a lot of analyses. You know, Glenn and I are doing some studies as academics, but there's lots of other academics now looking at the way this is playing out. And of course, this is just a tiny first step. We've got the November elections still to come, but yeah, I would share the basically positive thrust from what I've seen. And I think most of the national reporting, not all of it, the Wall Street Journal has run a couple of rather negative pieces, but most of the national reporting has been, you know, very positive and basically said, look, the system seems to have worked well. I think it was well administered. And, you know, I think Alaska was lucky to have a division of elections with, you know, experienced staff who, you know, they did a really good job under very difficult circumstances.
One thing that I noticed when Mary Peltola was campaigning here in Juneau is she did have a fairly big crowd, but she seemed very uncomfortable working the crowd. It seemed like it was still hard for her to break out of her sort of traditional Yupik shyness. How do you think she's got that kind of reserve, though she's warm and kind, but how do you think that her sort of whole aura of her whole quote niceness factor is going to play in D.C. in those few months that she will be filling Don Young's shoes?
I think she's going to do great. I think people are going to be very interested in her and Alaska, and she's just going to be a great ambassador for us because of who she is and her nature. And I was there at that rally too, and I think it was just a grace. She's graceful. She doesn't turn away from the person she's talking to. And it was kind of a little bit, you know, there are a lot of people there. So that's a hard situation to campaign in, and I've been there. But you want to spend time with everyone who wants to talk to you. And I saw her when we were leaving go back to talk to people and take pictures. And so I think, you know, she was also I would have been totally exhausted. I actually was exhausted. My dad used to say, you stand on your tongue, and that's how I felt. So, you know, she was tired, but she took the time to really talk and listen, and I think people in D.C. will respect and like this. I had the honor of getting to work for President Obama, and what I figured out finally was that you just are who you are. You bring your Alaskan sensibilities to them, and they liked that, and she's going to do the same thing and do great at it.
Well, Andrew, I have about 30 seconds left. And, sure. And some people, there have been some letters to the editor like, ditch this niceness stuff. I mean, you wouldn't say that about a man.
No, you know, absolutely not. And I believe that's Mary Peltola, one of Mary Peltola's biggest strengths, similar to Lisa Murkowski. Mm-hmm. You like her. That's you right. want to talk to her. And when you haven't talked to her in years, as I haven't, and when you catch up to her, it's like the next day. That's how at ease and comfortable she is with her relationships. And I think Mary and Lisa share a very common bond in that they're people who care about people.
You know, and I have to remember what Sarah Palin was like on the campaign trail when she was running for governor. And she came across as very genuine, very down to earth, and people really loved her and continue
right.
to.
I mean, right. But the problem was she had no vision on education or public safety or no real concept of a natural gas pipeline. I mean, she was a hell of a retail politician, but she didn't understand how government works. And the problem is 16 years later, she still doesn't.
Well, unfortunately, we've got to bring this conversation to a close. I could go on, and maybe we can have another one as we head into the campaign and talk about some of these things some more. But with me today, Benjamin Riley, a political scientist based at the East West Center in Hawaii, Glenn Wright, assistant professor of political science at the University of Alaska Southeast, Beth Kurtula, and Andrew Halcrow, former state representatives that served in the legislature with Mary Peltola. Thanks for joining us.
Yay. Thank you.
Wonderful to have you here. I learned a lot.